Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Good Morning Football!
Welcome to Good Morning Football, everybody. We're presented by Old Trapper Beef Jerky. We love kicking off our morning with highlights right here at the breakfast table in New York. My name's Kay Adams, Peter Schrager, Kyle Brett, and two-time Super Bowl champion, LeSean McCoy.
What's up?
Do I have to keep introducing you as 12-year vet, over 11,000 yards, no, right?
I like all of
it. So yeah, feel
like,
free.
Okay, you want the full treatment off your
eyes? Yeah, I like
okay.
it.
Okay, I know you're wearing your salute to service pin. Would you like to say hi to someone this morning?
Father, he yelled at me yesterday. Thanks for all your services. True vet, Ronnie McCoy.
By
the way, he's the best athlete in the family.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah.
So he says.
He's watching the show this morning. Yeah, we're all wearing the pins in honor of this NFL Salute to Service campaign. It is our year-round effort to honor, to empower, to connect with our nation's service members, veterans, and their families. You can learn more about the NFL's work with its longstanding military and veteran nonprofit partners by visiting NFL.com/salute. Good morning to all of our veterans and service members, including Ronnie McCoy. Time for the lead block. Let's get some highlights from Monday Night Football.
Let's go to Pittsburgh. Let's get after it, because this one was fun. Let's hear from Mike Tomlin. Mike, you have that one in the bag, right?
All right. Had it all the way, right? Man, that's just the nature of this thing. It's the National Football League. You're going to be in battles, man. The most important thing is that you smile in the face of adversity and deliver the necessary plays. And, you know, that's the silver lining in tonight's performance, man. We're up against it. A lot of it due to our own doing, but you got to also tip your cap to the Bears, man. They competed, and they competed for 60 minutes. The cool thing is we made the necessary plays, man. Ben took the offense down the field, and we got the necessary field goal, and we were able to close the game out, and I'm thankful for that.
Steelers excited to be 5-3. They're very much alive. We'll get to the Bears. Some exciting hope for the future in Justin Fields. But it wasn't that anybody was talking about. Nobody's talking about it this morning. It's this ending in Pittsburgh late in the fourth quarter. That's Cassius Marsh. He's a linebacker. He takes care of Big Ben. He sacks him and he appears to stare down the Steelers bench. Comes into contact with the referee, Tony Corrente, who flags him for taunting. Here's what Marsh had to say about the call.
I think it's pretty clear to everybody who saw it that I wasn't taunting. And, I've been doing the celebration my whole career, and, it's just sad to see stuff like that happen in a close game like that.
We know the rule. Reactions to the Cassius Marsh taunting penalty late in the fourth quarter.
Some backstory. This offseason, the NFL put in this taunting rule, and it kind of was buried under a lot of other new policies and rules. And I think there was a clear delineation of, like, what is taunting and what is not taunting. Taunting is when you're doing it in the face of somebody else, but celebrating is when you do it elsewhere. Because the Steelers had an interception yesterday, and the entire team gets to run into the end zone and celebrate
Take
and do
pictures,
the thing. And,
right.
Hey, pictures. And we're like, woohoo, Celly of the month. Like, we do this whole thing. Celebration. We love it. And then Cassius Marsh does this kick, looks at the sideline.
Nice kick, too. Nice kick, by the way.
Great kick. And we say, all right, well, that's dangerous to the game. This is where Tony Corrente's in a tough spot. The NFL's competition committee said this is a point of emphasis, which doesn't mean it's just a new rule. It's like, we want you guys to call this. Part of the reason was we were getting some gestures from players last couple years that were coming off as really bad sportsmanship. Some cases that were inciting violence on the field. Like, I don't know where the line crosses here. Look, the coach is yelling at him, but Cash is like, I've been doing that kick move my entire career, and he's had a long career.
It wasn't about the kick, right?
And he's like,
rules have changed.
That's rules true. Have changed. It's not the wrong call because it's the point of emphasis. Like, he's doing his job. It sucks. I know. It sucks if you're a Bears fan. Like, what do you mean? That's not the point. The rule is there. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he should follow the rules or not, or whether doesn't matter. This is a point of emphasis. And I remember I learned this rule over the offseason, and I was with a bunch of different colleagues from Fox, and Charles Woodson could not stomach it and was sitting in the room while the head of officiating was speaking to us, and he's raising his hand. He's like, you know that's going to cost someone a big game, or that's going to cost someone a playoff game. You can't have that cost a playoff game. Like, and they're like, yes, but the players will learn, and hopefully by the end of the season, they'll know you can't taunt. It's a tough thing to stomach, and of course the Bears would go on to score, so it's almost a moot point. But they also called it last week, and we didn't go nuts about it.
Right.
Eli Penny gets an easy first down, and it's a big play for the Giants. It is the rule. And
point of emphasis.
It's the point of emphasis. The league has told the refs, call this if you can. They did.
Well, I mean, this, like you said, there are new rules, but this is the thing. Like, be a smart football player. Seriously, though. Great first down. There's no reason to put your hand in the guy's face. As a veteran that played this game for a long time, they make these rules, right, to protect the teams, to protect the league. I get it, right? So once you get these new rules, you have to adjust. It's part of the game. We can't change it. We can't do nothing about it. We'll be complaining about it on the next day, you know, Monday or Sunday, you know. But you gotta take care of your team. And the right thing to take care of your team is do the right things, bro. Listen, celebrate, you know, take you on your defense, go down, take a picture, celebrate, but that's it. Go to the sideline. There's no reason to stare down the opposing team and looking at them. You're looking for a flag. You're looking for a flag. You know, so instead of complaining about it, just do the right thing, man. Celebrate your team and go to the other sideline and try to win the game.
Is it hard to know what's taunting and what's celebrating?
I mean, I think it is. I think it's obvious. Like, okay, you celebrate, you do the karate kick. It's cool. I don't think that was the flag. The karate kick was very good. And then you're staring at the opposing team, like, taunting them. Like, bro, do your thing, great job, and let's get moving. Yeah. We're trying to win the game. You do things like that, like you're costing your team.
The karate kick was not flagged. You've done it for years. You can do a karate kick.
You can do, yes, you can do that.
As long as you don't do it to a player.
Yeah.
Here's what's fascinating. It's not that there was another taunt in it. It wasn't that there was a kick. It's the official bump that is really weird. Here's where I come out. If you feel that this player lingered on the field, stared down the sideline, took the steps, and if you feel that's worthy of a game-changing penalty, throw it. Fine, if you have to throw it. He doesn't throw it until the bump.
But like, he's reaching for it, though. He's grabbing it. Okay. He's already grabbing it.
But then why does he wait till after the bump to throw it? Listen, there's insinuations and accusations out there that the official leaned his butt back into him.
Monte Ginobili?
It does look like it. I mean, it does. And just a little context here. At this point, the Steelers have been called for 2 penalties. Mm-hmm. The Bears have been called for 11.
Wow. Mm.
The Bears' sideline was apoplectic all night. It's a desperation game, going to a bye. The season might be over. Nagy, everyone was on the officials, like on them.
Right.
They're human beings. I think the officials had maybe had enough and were pissed and were tired of this and they've been getting worn out. That bump is a little bit weird, and I think it should be looked at. That's all I will say.
Thoughts on the bump?
That didn't look natural to me, Shady.
I'm not sure, but I think he was already grabbing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, hey, they're not that athletic. Come on. Mm-hmm. Give him a break, right?
You don't want that smoke.
And he's grabbing. He's
Are
looking.
You kidding me? This could be on Angry Runs right here.
He's already grabbing it.
You think he leans in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anybody not at the table?
I'm not sure if he leaned in. I'm not sure he would do that. But, hey,
also,
human beings.
Taunting has always been a rule. I love that Triggs is underlining, italicizing, and bolding the fact that it's a point of emphasis. And this isn't week 2, people. What are we complaining about? We're done with 9 weeks of football, and this emphasis has been applied across the board pretty much in every game. Maybe Bears fans haven't seen it up close and personal on a national level. It's been applied across the board. Maybe the competition committee, which they are able to, right, will review it, take a look at it. But for now, the rule is what the rule is. The Bears' frustration, I understand, but how about also 12 penalties for 15 yards?
But I think that's a...
And of course, this is the point that, when we'll dig into this a little bit more, and then you have the Justin Fields.
Yeah, like I think that's where that. There was a late hit called again, not called against Justin Fields. I think that's where Bears fans, right, have to be the cumulative
it's
effort.
Also, like, Marsh was on the Steelers last year. He's had a fight for everything. He wanted to have a little moment where he looked at the sideline and said, you get rid of us.
He knows he can't have that moment. Look at that coach and being like, are you an absolute idiot?
Revenge type.
I don't... Was that taunting? Was that taunting? I know the emphasis.
I think it was
under the emphasis.
But
though.
Listen, we'll adjust the same way with hitting the quarterbacks. I thought it was some legal hits, but they call flags. They'll figure a way to figure it out and adjust as players.
Right.
At GMFB, we're halfway through the season. It's been a thing all year. Tom Pelissero joining us right now. Tom, thanks for being here. We're all on Odell Beckham Jr. watch this morning. What do we need to know?
Okay, the Browns finally officially placed Odell Beckham Jr. on waivers on Monday, ending a 2.5-year run in which Baker Mayfield to Odell Beckham Jr. had the lowest passer rating of any duo in the NFL. The other 31 teams now have until 4 p.m. Eastern time today to claim Odell, but doing so would cause that new team to pick up the rest of Odell Beckham Jr.'s $7.25 million salary. If he clears waivers, which at this point seems likely, then Odell would be free to sign with any team. So what landing spots make sense? Well, the Saints and the 49ers both seem like logical fits, though Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan pointed out they would not be able to put in a waiver claim. They just don't have the cap space, so Odell would have to clear first. Seahawks coach Pete Carroll would not rule out the possibility of claiming Odell, and Seattle actually does have the cap space if they decide to go down that road. One team we know will not be claiming Odell, the team with the top priority spot on the waiver list, that is the Detroit Lions. Coach Dan Campbell, when asked about Odell, responded simply, no. Okay?
No. Black eyes in his tough coffee this morning. We love that, Dan Campbell. Oh, LaShawn's saying that is tough. Oh. We'll talk about Odell. We're on his watch, seeing where he lands all day long.
Yeah.
Here on NFL Network. Thank you so much, Tom. I'm getting perclipped just thinking about Odell's possible landing destinations. Week 10, we got football. Thursday night action. Lamar Jackson. Yep, his Ravens are going to go full force into primetime. The Dolphins looking to make a statement on their home turf. It's Ravens-Dolphins Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network, on Fox, and streaming on Prime Video. We have a huge show. Justin Tucker on the program. Scott Fioli, Brandon Staley. Dick Butkus? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, that's
Dick
true. Buckus. Say it again.
Dick Butkus! Love it. Bills, are they as good as we thought? How about those Patriots? Are they going to make it interesting in the AFC East?
It's time for a game of We In, We Out. We do this on Tuesdays. Here's how it works. You say a statement, you say you agree, you're in. If you don't agree, you're out. Jaguars surprised us all by defeating the Bills on Sunday, 9-6. Let's now take a look at where that leaves the Bills in their division. Okay, the Bills are in first. The Patriots are right on their heels in second.
Wow.
The statement is this. The Patriots, not the Bills, are going to win the AFC East in 2021.
I want to be in so badly. I want to. It's fun.
Yeah.
I'm still out. I can't let go. Simple things, the way to look at it, are the matchups. All right, mm-hmm. So New England plays Cleveland this week. That's tough. The Bills get the Jets. I still believe in Josh Allen. I know you've compared them to the evil empire of Star Wars. We're not allowed to do the song anymore.
We
can't do that. But, you know, what broke up the evil empire was a farmer. In one case, Luke Skywalker. In one case, Josh Allen.
Nice.
I picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl with great conviction. Mm-hmm. I can't jump ship on that because Bill Belichick strewn together a few wins with a rookie quarterback. I'm still going to go with the Bills, but it's getting real dicey.
Sidebar, yeah, how less convicted are you?
Because
5-3 with literally the softest schedule in the NFL. Not great.
They don't run. They lost.
They still play each other twice.
I know. Very strange.
Okay.
I would say that's good. In on this because I don't like 5-3 is a 2 week of a record for what they've played. But the schedule the rest of the way is great. The only team that they face that we consider a top team in the NFL are the Buccaneers. So I'm going to give Buffalo the edge, but it's close.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, once they're in the playoffs and the Patriots will be in the playoffs, we'll see what happens.
So that's two. So three. I'm going with the Bills. I don't think it's close. I really don't. I think they have, like you said, they have the Bucs. That's the hardest, I think, competition they have left.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one bad game doesn't make the Bills a bad team. Uh-huh. That's not Josh Allen. He's still there.
Super talented.
Stephon Diggs, he's still there, right? Tre'Davious White, he's still there.
Is there still any kind of big brother factor with New England? Like, I know Buffalo got over on
yeah,
that.
It's changed.
Still the bad guy.
Yeah, we're the big guys now. Tom's gone, so we're the big guys.
Oh, is that right?
AFC. Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Real quick, they beat who? They beat? They beat the Panthers. They beat the Panthers and the Jets.
Yeah.
Come on, like
okay.
You know, and they beat the Chargers. I give it respectful win, but come on, like you guys are bad teams with a lot of turnovers.
You played for the Bills for a long time in an era where Tom Brady owned that division.
Owned it.
Was there an inferiority when you guys would go and play the Patriots? Would you know like they're just gonna beat us? This is how, or did you guys walk into those games as Buffalo Bills saying, this is our week?
You know what? Honestly, we thought we could beat them guys. Like, I mean, Tom Brady is Tom Brady, so it was always hard to beat him. But defensively, they weren't that great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they are really good in the red zone. So they let you go up and down the field, getting yards, sure. but they really, like, buckle down in the red zone and they give you three. And how they match up is you get three, Tom gets seven. You keep adding it up, that's a loss. Ugh. So we never was scared to go against him, but it's hard to beat Tom Brady.
And he's not there anymore.
He's gone, though. He is gone. He's going to
take. Is it hard to beat Mac Jones?
Right. It's easy to beat Mac Jones.
Easy to beat Mac Jones?
For the Bills. For the Bills. He's a good player, but come on. The Jets and the Panthers, I can't get crazy over that. That's a good wins, but this is the Bills. And it is a big loss. Sean McDermott's going to be on him. I know him.
Shrig's face. The gap is closing a little bit from last year.
One team's 5-3 coming
sure.
off a loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The other one's 5-4 coming off three straight wins. Mm-hmm. It's an argument. It's a discussion. Mm-hmm. They play twice.
Mm-hmm. Still.
We'll see how it happens. All right. Next topic.
If the Bills blow that division to a rookie quarterback, you got to be kidding me.
It's it.
Yeah,
contract
right.
the team. You're done. You can't lose to a rookie.
Like, they also won it. They won it last year. So it's like you already got over the hump. You can't revert back.
Belichick's
to that.
Back.
I know.
Voldemort.
Patriots don't win the division. Do they make it further in the playoffs?
Probably. Yeah. Probably win the whole damn thing.
That's kind of the way.
Pats Bucks Super Bowl. Anybody here for it?
Yeah. Monday Night Football was awesome last night, and you've got those guys. In some of these weeks, we have the Manning cast, and it's an alternative broadcast featuring Peyton and Eli and guests. And you've heard of the Madden curse, where you go on the Madden cover and then you don't have a great season or you get injured or something catastrophic happens. But this was brought to our attention over the weekend. Is there such a thing as the Manning cast curse? Let me explain.
Go on.
There's only a few current players who have been on the Manning cast. Here is what has happened in the following week after appearing as a guest on the Manning cast.
Juju.
Kelsey lost. Russell Wilson lost. Mm-hmm. Gronk lost. Stafford lost. Even Brady went on and it was great with Peyton and Eli. They lose to the... Then Josh Allen last week, you're like, there's no way they're losing to the Jaguars. They lose. So I'll put this out there. This might not be great for the Omaha Productions folks trying to book some guests.
I think they're doing okay.
There is such a thing as the Manning cast curse. Are we in, Kay, or is this just a weird coincidence?
I feel like I used to believe in curses and juju and all of that, but then, like, the Red Sox and Cubs did their thing, and then Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl when he was on the cover of Madden. I think all those curses sort of broke. I don't believe any part of me that believed in this kind of stuff ended with those.
Okay.
I'm out.
I don't know, Kay. Hey, listen.
You're
those are six or seven, right? I gotta go. If I'm in, man, I can't. You on that? If you're on that show, and I love the Mannings, you might get a loss.
So if you're Nick Chubb and they call and say, "Can you come on hang out?" What does Nick Chubb have to tell them? No.
Chubb, stay away, bro. Please stay away.
It's
not looking good. Say thank you, but no thank you.
God, that's good. Peter. I could not be more in. I'm going to do the like Borat style.
Right.
I love you, S&A. Because we need a new one. The Madden curse has been broken for years and years. Has anybody checked in on Sue Bird? What's going on with the Seattle Storm? Chuck Barkley, inside the NBA, seems to be doing fine, but I'm worried about it. I'm way into this. Conan O'Brien used to do a bit called The Curse of Cocoon, because all the cast members kept dying because they were like 90 years old, and that was the joke. However, I am in on this, and I got to think, there is something realistic about, like, ooh, I got the call to come on the Manning cast. I'm the best player in the world. I can just mail in this game against the Jaguars. There is a little something going on there about feeling yourself.
What about the Monday night not being in the film room and you're busy?
You should be watching film.
Right. Why is Stafford not studying tape?
Hey, maybe if Josh Allen was watching more Jaguars tape, unless he's yucking it up with the Eli, it's an interesting point.
Stay away. Oh, my God.
So now we're all watching. He's going to be there.
But no thank you.
You know what show doesn't have a curse?
Our show.
The Good Morning Football Program.
That's right. So come on in.
Peter's
you're
going
to get you a win.
You know?
I would like that full screen.
Exactly.
We don't have enough time in 3 hours, Peter, to show GMFB how much guys ball out after coming on our show. You felt the Good Morning Football bump.
Right.
You'd come on. You'd feel good about yourself.
It's a great vibe.
He's the definition of the word clutch. He's coming off the 18th game-winning field goal in his career. This man has set records throughout his NFL career, including a mind-blowing 66-yard field goal, which is so crazy to actually think about. Back in Week 3, that set the record for the longest field goal in actual NFL history. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Justin Tucker.
What's up, guys? Hey, thanks for having me again.
Hey. We're so happy to have you here whenever you want to stop by. You had a big game early this week against Miami on Thursday Night Football. But for another instance this past week, the Ravens no stranger to overtime this season. Three games going into extra minutes. We're all sweating and stressed out. That's counting, not counting the two additional games aside in the final minutes, by the way. What is your mindset? Describe it to me when you know you're going to be called on to kick that game-winning field goal.
Yeah, I feel like I'll sound like a broken record at this point, but everything is all about seeing the ball and striking the ball, trusting the technique, focusing on the on the action over the consequence, and seeing the snap come back. Nick Moore, as he's already proven he can do quite well, throws back 12 o'clock laces. Sam Cook does an excellent job as always, spotting the ball for me. Ball kicks itself at that point, seeing the ball go through the uprights is, in those moments, it's an amazing feeling.
Let's go back to week three, Justin, because it may be the turning point of the Ravens season. You guys are down by 1 point in Detroit, and things aren't going your way. And then Lamar makes a couple big plays, and you get the ball just over the 50-yard line. Obviously, remember what happens from there. But I want to go into your mindset, because it's not only a game-winning field goal, it's a 66-yard record-setting game-winning field goal. You trot onto that field knowing what's at stake. What's going through Justin Tucker's head?
There's a lot that's going through my head. One of the first things I can think of is, well, I left 3 points out there earlier in the game when I missed a 49-yarder in the first quarter. So I'm going to have an opportunity to make up for that, which is nice. But it's from 66 yards away, so I'm going to have to dig a little bit deeper to, find a way to just get this ball to go. And, like I just mentioned, Nick throws back a great snap. Sam gives me a great spot. Guys up front hold for just like a tenth of a second longer than they normally would have to. Because when you're 66 yards away, you got to find a way to, put a little extra juice behind that ball. So I took a little crow hop into it, got the ball off in about 1.4 seconds as opposed to, typical 1.25 to 1.35 seconds. But when you're 66 yards away, you can kind of swing for the fences and no one is really, truly no one's really expecting you to make it, except for, the people that are directly involved in making that kick. So now if it was if it was a 36 yarder like we had this last week, there's almost more pressure because everyone's kind of expecting you to make that. When you're an additional 30 yards away, you can kind of swing for the fences, which is exactly what we did. I mean, I just swung out of my shoes and got the ball just far enough. I think we had a little divine intervention help that ball bounce the right way. So thankful for that.
Yeah, or DeLion intervention, I think they call it. I'm getting a pumped about it because that kick took a victory lap last night. The Bears attempted a 66-yard field goal to end the game, and it was woefully short. It just showed how incredible yours was, Justin. After yours in week three, you got a visit from the esteemed Madden ratings adjuster, and we're finally bumped to a 99 overall rating. Woo! For a limited time, like the McRib or something, making you the fifth kicker to have a 99 rating in Madden history. What was your reaction to seeing that change, and what took so long?
I was pretty stoked. I love the Madden franchise. Like, I've always had the game ever since I was a kid. So, first of all, just to be on the game, just to be, featured as a player in the game, coming in my rookie year with no avatar, actual picture. I just had like the little silhouette-y guy for a while.
Yeah, the shadow.
Even that was the shadow guy. Even just getting to experience that, for the last decade now is incredibly special. But then to be bumped up to the 99 club, like the McRib for a limited time, it's still pretty cool. But I hit up Chad Steele as soon as that was announced that I was going to be in the 99 club for a limited time. I asked Chad, hey, can you pull some strings and see if I can get one of those diamond encrusted 99 chains that are the gold cleats that these guys reveal in these amazing unboxing videos in the off season. I mean, like I I know I'm not Patrick Mahomes or, you know, or Aaron Donald, but, you know, if even if just for a limited time, they could put a little asterisk next to the 99 on the chain. Yeah. I'd be fine with that. But, you know, I would have loved to have that. So maybe you guys, you know, with Good Morning Football, I know you guys have some pull. Maybe you guys can make that happen for me.
Maybe we will.
Well, I'll say what, man. Hey, listen. If you ask Patrick Mahomes and AD, they'll think that you're a 99 just like them. Yeah. You deserve it.
Yeah.
But so we're talking Ravens football. So yesterday on this show, I said, you're not a Hall of Fame kicker. No. But a Hall of Fame player. When you hear things like that in statements, what does that mean to you?
I mean, that's incredibly high praise. And it's, you know, it's meaningful. You know, one of the reasons we all play this game is to, you know, to achieve some sort of recognition so we, you know, can leave our mark on the game, you know, leave our legacy, so to speak. I mean, Ray Lewis talked about that all the time. At the exact same time, the individual accolades and awards or recognition, they are absolutely special, but they pale in comparison to the feeling of celebrating with your teammates after, you know, like, I mean, you guys are showing off, showing all these kicks that get made that, you know, that have won games. And, I want to emphasize, we make those kicks, you know, we get in position to put games away because, you know, whether it's, you know, Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson or defense getting a late stop when we need it. Being a part of those moments is really what it's all about. So, hearing Gold Jacket talk right now it's special. I embrace it. I think any reasonable player would absolutely do the same thing. But I can tell you, while you're in it, you enjoy the moment for what it's worth. And it's worth more when you get to share the moment with, you know, people you love being around.
Enjoy it, embrace it, well said and well deserved as well, all that Hall of Fame talk. The King of Clutch, yeah. Justin Tucker.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
We now welcome back to the show a three-time Super Bowl champion. He was the vice president of player personnel with the New England Patriots. He's also a general manager for the Chiefs and an assistant general manager for the Atlanta Falcons. Let's bring on Scott Pioli. Scott, what's up, Scott?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
Great to have you on, Scott. And the NFL is quite a whirlwind this season. And the latest is Jordan Love making his first career start under the most unlikely of circumstances. And unfortunately, he struggled. Is it possible that a performance like that could actually completely change and shift the long-term decision-making of a franchise when they look at player personnel and a roster?
Peter, I guess it's possible, but it really shouldn't. Because, again, you mentioned the circumstances that he had that week leading into his first start were, I would say, unprecedented. So he walks into a week where there's mental distractions, there's emotional distractions. He's got to come in for a starting quarterback that's not going to be around to help him during the week of practice, to not help him on the sideline. Because that's something that's real that happens in the NFL when a young player takes over. Sometimes they have that veteran presence next to him during the in between the breaks, in between the series, to help him out. He didn't have any of that. And to me, I don't think that they should overreact. What I did love seeing after the game was Matt LaFleur coming right out and saying, hey, this falls on me squarely. The player not being ready, the quarterback not being ready, his performance was based on what I did, not what he did. Because what has to happen now is they've now seen him in a game situation. They have to evaluate his strengths, his limitations. And now what they have to do moving forward is accentuate his positives and limit his limitations. And what Matt LaFleur was saying is, I'm going to take care of that for Jordan Love.
Scott, Odell Beckham Jr. is out there, doesn't have a team. And there's a take that actually the Browns are better without him. A lot of opinions about Odell. Odell is a lot of player, a lot of talent, a lot of person. It's just a lot of everything. What goes into an organization's thoughts when they're going to release a player considered one of the best wideouts in the league at one point and a super talented guy?
You know, Kyle, you said something really important there. At one time, he was considered one of the best receivers in the league. So now when you get into circumstances like this where you have an unhappy player, a team that's unhappy with the player, you start putting it on the scales of balance and you say, okay, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is he worth having come around? Is he helping the team, hurting the team? Is this going to be addition by subtraction if we move away from the player? So what happened is they huddled. They realized the marriage wasn't working. They were trying to keep it as quiet as possible, but it's nearly impossible in situations like this. And I've been in situations like this. What you want to do is make a decision, move on, make sure that both sides try to win. You don't want to poke the player in the eye because you've got other players that are watching how you're going to behave. But the key thing is the Browns had to pay attention to precedent in this. And if you have a player that wants out and you just let a player get out, then you're setting this precedent that anytime there's a player that's unhappy with the situation, mm-hmm. they realize that there's a path to get themselves out of the program. So there's a lot to weigh within all this. Hopefully this will end where both sides win and both sides are happy in the end.
That would be nice. Thank you so much, Scott Pioli, waking up with us, giving us your analysis. The Week 9 was upset city, wasn't it? Bills to the Jags, the Cowboys lose to the Broncos, the Rams fall to the Titans on Sunday Night Football. What are the conversations like in the building a day after a loss like that at this point in the season?
Kay, I think you don't overreact. You know, LeSean said something before that I thought was really important. We had a bad game. That doesn't make us a bad team. And I agree with that 100%. Yet there's also this balance where the team has to acknowledge that they had a stinker. They really did. So when you look at the situation, take, for instance, the Rams. The Rams had turnovers that they never had. A quarterback, Matthew Stafford, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, made some decisions that are just so completely out of character. He has to own them and grow from them. They had 12 penalties for, I think, 115 yards. That is not Rams football. Sean McVay, prior to that, his team was the least penalized team in the league. So what I think you need to do is go in there on Monday, tell the truth, but not just say, oh, well, that's not us. We're going to get better than that. You have to have true peer accountability in the locker room and say, okay, we stunk. We did this bad, but why did we do it? There needs to be, again, this balance between acknowledging your failure, but really coming up with tangible reasons why we failed and move forward.
Hey, Scott. Russell Wilson has been cleared by doctors to play on Sunday against the Packers after undergoing surgery on his right hand. What do you see as the pros and cons of starting a quarterback coming off a surgery like that?
LeSean, I only see the pros because you've got this great situation, what looks like a great situation now. You've got a player that's really positive, upbeat, and confident in what the injury is. You've got doctors that are saying he's fine, he's ready to go. Then what happened yesterday was he threw the ball in practice and Pete Carroll raved about how it was going. So to me, this is a terrific situation for the Seattle Seahawks because again, the process is you have a player coming back from an injury. The trainers talk, the doctors talk, the general manager and the head coach, everyone is gathered, but you're also communicating from those different viewpoints with the player to make sure that the player's mindset is right. Because what you don't want is a player to go into a game with an injury and or think that he has an injury or have an out. One of the most important things I learned about players that are injured, the reason that Bill Parcells back in the day didn't want players talking about injuries wasn't to give information to the other team. It was because when players went into a game, if they were talking about an injury and letting the public know about an injury, if they succeeded that week, they were a hero and it was taking away from what the team did and the greater good. If the player failed, he had this built-in excuse for failure because he wasn't 100%. Because as you know, LeSean, no player is 100% even entering the regular season. So to me, I think what the Seahawks have going on right here is this confluence of really good news, and I'm expecting to see something good out of Russell Wilson this week.
Yeah, and with the NFC wide open for those wild card spots, it could be a very interesting November, December, and now January as we wrap up the regular season. Scott, real quick, we got Dick Butkus later on in the show. What's that mean to you?
Oh, man, I'm telling you what. I don't know if you guys remember, but when I was living in my house in Atlanta, I always had the background picture of the Sports Illustrated with Dick Butkus. Yeah. I wore number 51 throughout my entire childhood, through high school, through college football. I mean, I'm an old guy, right? So back in the day, he was everything that football represented. He was all about that. And that's cool. I'm sticking around to watch you guys. I watch you usually before, but now I'm going to stick around and watch you see some more.
We'll take it.
Yeah, he will be here. Brandon Staley, Mr. Gopher on fourth down, will also be on our program.
And what we're doing here is we're building a team. All right? You can't do it without a guy that can finish the game for you, all right, as a kicker. All right, game
going in time!
As the head coach, see you on Wednesday.
Yeah!
Yeah! James lifting him.
Just makes me so happy. Lucky for us, we don't have to wait till Wednesday to see our next guest. We welcome to the breakfast table the man, this feels so good to say, at the helm of the 5-3 leaders of the AFC West, the Chargers head coach, Brendan.
Let's go, coach! Let's go, coach!
What's up, coach?
Morning, guys.
Hi, Mr. Staley, and happy birthday to your five-year-old son who turns five today, Will Staley, out there celebrating, hopefully, and eating all the sugar he can get his hands on. But let's talk a little ball here. I'm very excited about this team. Going into week 9, your squad was coming off back-to-back losses. I was getting a little nervous. You lose to the Ravens, you lose to the Patriots, then you go to the East Coast and you beat the Eagles on a last-second field goal. Justin Herbert, big performance in the comeback. Tell me about the level of maturity that your young quarterback showed on Sunday, being able to put those losses behind him and focusing on what's ahead of him.
Yeah, Justin had a big-time performance. I think he kind of embodies that calm is contagious, I think, for all of us. I think that's such a special trait of his. I think he had a really awesome week of practice after two tough games. And Kay, you said it, just, you know, those 2 weeks didn't happen for him like he hoped, but I felt like he learned a lot from both those games. And I felt like he really came out aggressive in the football game. And I think that one thing that allowed him to play so well is it was a line of scrimmage game. Our offensive line really, really won the day for us. And we had some really big performances from our skill position players. We kind of spread it around. Everyone touched the ball. And it was just a really complete performance for us offensively. And Justin certainly led the way.
He went 32 of 38 for 356 and two tugs. And the best part about this team and this win that we were watching on Sunday, last 6 minutes of the game, Eagles never got the ball. That's because of an aggressive nature that you have built with this team. Let's talk about it. Going for it on fourth down, you've been really big on it. And on Sunday, we saw it again. First, it's the Austin Eckler leap, and then it's the timeout, and then it's this decision. Do we bring out the kicker? Where we bring out Justin to keep the chains moving, and you guys bring out Justin Herbert on a fourth down to get the quarterback sneak and to convert it. Let me ask you, was there ever a doubt during that timeout? Are we going for this, or are we bringing out Hopkins to put the game away here?
I think the decision was more which play was it going to be. I really wanted to finish the game with the ball. After I saw Nick use those timeouts, I knew he was trying to create a possession for himself at the end of the game, and I felt like where that ball was at just felt like we would make this first down and then we would finish the game with the ball on our terms. And I would be able to live with that. And I felt like our offensive team was just really playing at a high level. I liked the matchup. I really liked our design at the time. And I think, you know, our guys are used to being in those situations, you know, even within that own drive. You know, we went for it before that and made it. And I just felt really confident in our group. And Justin was able to make the play for us. And then we split him on a run. Late and got in there even closer. And that, as a coach, is a great feeling, knowing that you really finished the game, playing your best ball.
32 teams, there's not a team that's more fun to watch than the Chargers this year, coach. It's incredible. And you're right in the middle of it, obviously. We love your background. We love the ladder that you climbed, specifically from John Carroll University, the Blue Streaks, just 5 years ago. You were running their defense, a great Division III program. You are now the head coach of the Chargers. Coach, for somebody who's watching this who might be in coaching or just in their own line of work, and they want to know, how do I get ahead? How do I climb? I want to get that job. What's the secret to making that journey that quickly?
I think, you know, that statement, like, be where your feet are and be present and really maximize your role, whatever role that is really important. And I think, like, what really happened for me was I always was envisioning I was in the NFL when I was at John Carroll. I was calling plays like I was defending Tom Brady or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or Pat Mahomes. That's how I was doing it. Now, we were playing against Mount Union and Wisconsin Whitewater. They were different teams, great opponents, but that's where my mind was. And even though I was coaching in college, I had a double education going. I was studying the NFL every single week and staying current with everything that was happening in the NFL because that was my dream. And I think that if you have aspirations of doing something, you really have to work at your game. you know, you're not just going to let, you know, sort of have this, you know, lucky path where, hey, a couple things go your way and then all of a sudden you're where you want to be. You got to make your breaks happen because of how good you are, you know, and I feel like that's something I've tried to do is be a complete coach. So if I got the opportunity to get in front of a John Fox or a Vic Fangio, come from John Carroll, that I would be able to hold up with those guys and be able to show them, hey, I belong here. And that's all I've tried to do and is work at my game. And even, you know, now as a head coach, you know, every day there's so much to do, Kyle. And I think that that's where it starts for me. It's just every day waking up knowing you better be working.
Mm. Wow.
It's great.
That's great, man. Hey, Coach, switching gears for a second. So every year the NFL has a crucial catch that brings awareness to cancer screenings and diagnostics. So tell us about your journey as a cancer survivor and how the NFL crucial catch has impacted your life and also the Chargers' life, or Chargers' family's life, I'm sorry.
You know, LaShawn, number one, good to see you and so much respect for your game. But I think that cancer has been such a big part of my life. And, you know, since I was 6 years, you know, in the sixth grade, my mom being diagnosed with breast cancer, she had it for a long time, a really intense cancer diagnosis. And as we know, breast cancer affects so many women throughout the world. And I got to see it up close as a young kid growing up. And I saw what cancer can do to you, you know, and what, you know, a person has to go through. With my mom and my dad had, you know, thyroid cancer growing up. And then he just went through prostate cancer. So he's a 2-time cancer patient. And then when I went through, you know, my stuff that when I was 24, my first year in coaching, when I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, I think that cancer brings out the best in you. I think that it reveals a lot of who you are inside. And I think that it brings people together. I think what I love about the NFL is that crucial catch initiative brings people together. And it also brings a lot of awareness to a topic that impacts everybody. And I know that I wouldn't be the head coach of the Chargers today if I weren't a cancer patient. And I feel like when I got to the other side of my cancer deal, that's when I really took off as a coach, because I knew where I was headed. And there's a feeling, there's a confidence once you get to the other side of it that you can't explain. And then when you're part of that fraternity of people that have been through it, you have a real responsibility to set a great example. And that's what I've been trying to do ever since, is live the example for other people. And it's just amazing what the NFL can do for people and so many different initiatives. Now it's the Salute to Service Month. And that's amazing because what I love about the NFL is it brings people together.
It's so true. Tough, it's such man. An important tough, perspective to have. My mom, a 2-time cancer survivor, she had thyroid cancer as well, so it affects absolutely everyone. It's such an important perspective to have, and we thank you for sharing it with us as always, Coach. Let's talk a little football, though. Looking ahead to your next opponent, Vikings. They're at home, late game, late window on Sunday. Another heartbreaking loss to the Ravens on Sunday. So give us a little bit of the scouting report. What do you have to do to ensure success against the Vikings?
So much respect for Mike Zimmer. You know, one of my best friends coached with him for a really long time when they were really rolling it. And, you know, what he's done at that place is just remarkable since he's been the head coach there. And they've got a lot of really good players, you know, just on offense. You know, you Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, these guys, I mean, that's as good of a trio as you're going to find in the National Football League. And we all know when Kirk Cousins gets hot, he can really, really throw it. I really love what they've done on the offensive line with Darisaw, and I've got a lot of respect for Brian Neal, you know, Garrett Bradbury. Those guys are really good players, and I just think that they've done a good job, you know, putting together an offense that's really tough to defend. And then on defense, I mean, those guys, I've got so much respect for their game. Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr, Harrison Smith, those guys have been there a really long time. Danielle Hunter, I'm wishing him a really healthy trick back after his injury, because he's a heck of a player. Everson Griffin, just those guys I have a lot of respect for. I was in Chicago and had to go against those guys twice a year. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good football team. And I know their record isn't indicative of how talented they are, and how, you know, what that film says is this team's really dangerous. And they definitely have our full attention. They gave Baltimore all they could handle. And, you know, it's going to be a great game on Sunday.
We cannot wait. Coach, I have loved and supported this team long before you were there, and I've never been to a Chargers game. I'm going to my very first one this weekend at SoFi, so bring it against the Vikings, okay?
Absolutely. We may have a couple surprises there for you guys. You know, we're always trying to make sure Good Morning Football has a bunch of Chargers stuff well represented.
We are now joined by a couple of gentlemen, one of whom is a Bears legend and a Pro Football Hall of Famer, another of whom is a 3-time Super Bowl champ. Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Butkus and Bart Oates. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good
So we have North Jersey on the far right. We have Southern California in the center and Manhattan on the far left. We're going to get through this, guys. Let's go. Let's get into it right now. Dick, we are so thrilled to have you on. We don't even know where to start with you. Let's go back to your playing career, if you would. One of the most feared players in NFL history. Your nicknames included the Enforcer, the Animal, and the Maestro of Mayhem. Dick, if someone were to come up to you right now, a young person who didn't get to see you play, and ask you, Mr. Butkus, what were you like on the field? How would you answer?
Well, maybe a little of each of your descriptions that you just said. I just, you know, I grew up loving the game, and I just thought, you know, I just leave everything on the field, and you know, this shaking hands and all this business, I didn't really believe in that. I'm playing against somebody I'm trying to beat, and I'm not gonna, you know, be patting them on the back and helping people up. So whatever I could do to, you know, kind of destroy their desire to play well is what was my goal. Just, and the way to do that is just to hit people hard. Plain and simple, hit hard.
Plain and simple, Dick Butkus joining us. We've got three-time Super Bowl champ Bart Oates here as well. The Bears and Giants, among the NFL's most lasting franchises, 9 seasons with the Giants. What was the most unique part about representing such a proud city and organization like the New York Giants?
We just had a great camaraderie. Bill was Parcells was the coach when I came in, and was a guy, not the easiest guy to play for, but he was a guy that, you know, if you followed his lead, he was going to put together a team and put you in a position to win. And that's what he did. We weren't a great offense, but we had a great defense. There were times that we'd come off the field after we had a turnover, and he'd get us all together, and he'd yell at us, and he'd say, guys, I don't need you to win a game. Just don't lose it for my defense. And so he was a guy that just give him a little lead and he'll let the special teams and the defense take over. And so it was not the easiest for an offensive guy, but listen, we won and it worked. It was a system that he put together, and it was just an awesome time.
Dick, I'm so thankful that I don't have to play and run the ball against somebody like you. Thank God. Now you joined the Bears the same year as the legendary Bears running back, Gale Sayers, who's by far one of my favorite running backs of all time. But for the young generation who hasn't seen Gale Sayers play in person, what made Gale Sayers a running back of his own generation? You know, any running back have you seen so far, you know, amounted to his talent?
I think the latest guy would be maybe Barry Sanders. Gale had this ability to change direction on a dime at full speed. And, you know, I had to practice against him every day. And that's why I attribute some of my success to him, because if I could tackle Gale in practice, I could tackle anybody. And, you know, he could throw the ball, and he just had that ability. And to stop on a dime and go in another direction so quickly that you couldn't react to that. And second, and also, you know, he was a powerful runner too. He could take people on. So I was just blessed to be able to watch probably one of the best running backs in the history of the game.
Awesome stuff. I mean, it's crazy for us to have Dick Butkus and Bart Oates on the show. Bart, we're here in New York. Giants fans look to you and say, practicing attorney, three-time Super Bowl champion, like the core of that offensive line. But your story really starts in a little town in Georgia. Tell us about your childhood playing football and if you ever thought that you someday could be hoisting a Lombardi trophy in the center of the field and really with Parcells and Sims and all those guys celebrating it for the New York Giants.
No. I mean, I grew up in a little town in Southwest Georgia, Albany, Georgia. I had no idea. I mean, I love football. My older brother Brad and my older brother Barry both played, so I just followed them, I think. And Brad played in the NFL for about 7 years, and then we also we had a chance to play together in the USFL when I first came out. And so I wasn't even drafted in the NFL. I went to the USFL and played there for 3 years until the Giants were in need of a center, and I was a free agent, and I came out of the USFL and you know, just came to the right team at the right time. It was, you know, just I was blessed, you know, quite frankly, to be that. It was, you know, I joined a bunch of guys that were just, you know, not big egos, but guys that wanted to win. And, you know, we just, we're excited. And to be able to make it to a couple of Super Bowls with the Giants and then 49ers was, yeah, just, I was, like I said, I was very blessed.
Well, we were very blessed to watch it. We were having a blast this morning talking to Bart Oates and Dick Butkus, and we're going to talk shortly about the Huddle Up Initiative and the Butkus Foundation. But in the meantime, we are a show that lives and breathes football. But, Dick, we love all kinds of media and entertainment and Hollywood, and we have incredible memories of your run as a cultural phenomenon after your playing days, which included but not limited to appearances on Taxi, Magnum P.I., Fantasy Island, Growing Pains, MacGyver, My Two Dads, of course. It was a prolific career you're still having. Do you have a favorite moment during your acting career?
Well, probably doing the series Hang Time.
Anthony Anderson.
I was playing a high school coach. It was a kid's show, but I think we tried to deliver a message to the kids, you know, through the episodes that we did. And I thought that was of some value to kids. And, you know, it's embarrassing sometimes because some elderly people come up to me and says, you know what, I used to watch Hang Time and this and that on Saturday morning. we tried to do, you know, give a message to high school kids and instead of all this other crap that's on TV.
Yep.
Mr. Bud, because I could listen to you all day. Bart, you are the president of the NFL alumni. You're kicking off the second year of Huddle Up, Let's Talk Obesity. It's a great campaign. It's very important. Why is the topic of obesity so relevant to you personally, to retired athletes especially?
Well, Kay, thanks. And appreciate it. And let us kind of share this message. I played. I was up to 290 when I was playing, and I was able to drop some weight. I always struggled, so I, you know, as opposed to many of my compatriots and colleagues in the game, guys that are just big human beings, they have the issues and difficulty. We did a survey, and over 40% of our guys consider themselves in the obesity, in obese. So we wanted to, as the NFL Alumni Association and former players, just kind of raise awareness with our members, with fans about obesity, and kind of make it a positive discussion. You know, there's a lot of people don't realize it's not just diet and exercise. There's a lot of other issues surrounding obesity, like genetics, hormones, our social environment, stress and sleep. They all affect our weight and our health. And so, you know, we wanted to create this dialogue that said, listen, if there's issues, you know, particularly for people that have the, I'll call them the chronic obesity issues, that, you know, there's other ways of addressing it. It's not just diet and exercise. It's not just a willpower type of thing. And so kind of create this very positive messaging, if you will, about it. And so let's just, again, let's huddle up like we did when we played. Let's talk about it. Let's create a game plan. And if there's issues, there are ways to address this. And so we really want to create that information. And so we've got a website, huddleupobesity.org, part of our NFLalumni.org website, and really hoping that we can make a difference. So we appreciate it to letting us share the story.
Of course, it is incredibly positive messaging, as is everything you're doing, Dick, with the Butkus Foundation and the Butkus Award given to linebackers at the high school, college, and pro levels. Gentlemen, I wish we had more time because there's so much to talk about. We are thrilled to have you both on, and I hope you do it again sometime soon.
Love watching you guys.
Love watching you, too. Thank you very much, Bart Oates and Dick Butkus, two legends and two incredible gentlemen in the football community.